Learn live in the classroom at Online Trading Academy's Financial Education Center in Bellevue. You'll have access to state-of-the-art workstations where you can learn on a professional trading platform. Text Cairo to 57682 to register for a free half-day workshop and learn more.
The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from Carter Subaru Studios, welcome to our top stories this hour. And I do have a little bit more on what Ursula was reporting. The report from ESPN's Adam Schefter that the Seahawks plan to bring in Colin Kaepernick for a workout. Let's get right to our top story.
The Big Lead, top story.
So ESPN's Adam Schefter claims that the Seahawks had planned to bring in Colin Kaepernick for a workout. He says that team officials postponed the trip that they had planned with Kaepernick for the workout, that they postponed the trip when the quarterback declined to say he would stop kneeling during the national anthem next season. And Schefter's quoting a league source on that. Now, I told you a few weeks ago when the Seahawks released Trevon Boykin after the domestic violence allegations down in Texas, who was the only signed quarterback backup to Russell Wilson on the Seahawks roster. And I said there is a 0% chance of the Seahawks signing Colin Kaepernick, because the Seahawks did bring Kaepernick in for a workout a year ago. And they asked Kaepernick at that time if he would stop kneeling for the anthem. And he wouldn't commit to standing with the rest of the team. And so I'm really surprised by this ESPN report that the Seahawks were considering bringing Kaepernick in again. But that is the ESPN report today. Adam Schefter says the Seahawks contacted Kaepernick about 2 weeks ago to arrange a visit to the team's VMAC headquarters. But after tentative arrangements were made and travel was planned, the trip was unexpectedly scuttled over the Seahawks' last-minute stipulation regarding Kaepernick's anthem stance, according to this source. The source said the Seahawks wanted to know that Kaepernick would not kneel this season, and he was unwilling to give that assurance to them. So it sounds very similar to what happened a year ago when the Seahawks were maybe the only team. There are rumors that the Baltimore Ravens also gave Kaepernick a workout, but the Seahawks are the only team that absolutely did a year ago. And they didn't sign him. Kaepernick wants starting quarterback money, and Pete Carroll at the time said, yeah, he should be a starting quarterback, and that's why the Seahawks didn't sign him. But I also believe that the Seahawks and the other 31 teams around the NFL, not through collusion, but independently, have reached the same conclusion about Kaepernick, and that is he's way more trouble than he's worth. Here is Adam Schefter, who had this report for ESPN today.
The Seahawks had planned for Colin Kaepernick to work out for them earlier this week. And at the last moment, that trip was postponed because a conversation occurred in which they wanted to know what he was going to be doing on the field this year before and during the national anthem. And I don't think he was willing to give them an answer at that point to commit one way or another. And with that still hanging out there, the Seahawks postponed that trip. Some might say canceled it. Depends on how you look at it. But it's a situation here where Colin Kaepernick was going to come in there and work out, and now he's not.
And again, I don't know if this is true, because the Seahawks have already worked out Kaepernick. They know what he's capable of doing. John Schneider and Pete Carroll, they have been in the same division as Kaepernick for several years. They saw him twice a year with the 49ers. Kaepernick is too much of a distraction. Two of the Seahawks' biggest distractions last season were Michael Bennett, who was sitting for the anthem every Sunday, and Richard Sherman, who had too many sideline blowups with coaches and the offensive players. The Seahawks don't need distractions. And they took steps, and I'm sure there were, you know, football reasons involved as well. But two of their biggest distractions are not on the team any longer. The last thing the Seahawks made is Colin Kaepernick. And frankly, there's no NFL team that needs that. If he's going to be a backup quarterback, I've said this a million times, you don't want a swarm of television cameras and microphones every practice, every game, with your backup quarterback. That's not good for locker room morale. It's somebody who has decided to put himself above and before the team. And that's the last thing that any NFL team wants. And the league certainly doesn't need it. Television ratings way down last year off of the way down 2016 numbers. And the league wants to get back to fans just seeing football and not social protests. If Colin Kaepernick wants to protest, he can do it at night. He can do it on his Tuesday off day during the season, not during the game. Here's what John Schneider said about Kaepernick and his kneeling.
To clear this up, was Colin Kaepernick ever seriously considered as the backup quarterback?
Absolutely.
And?
We just went a different direction last year. I mean, it was just a situation where we never got
Did his politics work against him?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think so. Like, you know, because we're concentrating on football and, you know, people aren't going to agree with what you're doing all the time. You know what I mean? It's just we have to do what we feel like is right for our football team. And then, you know, we can't get into too much about what other people are going to think.
No, but I still contend that you don't want somebody who puts themselves before the team. That was when John Schneider was in the building a couple of weeks ago. Our friend Dave Wyman is talking about this over on our sister station, 710 ESPN Seattle. Here is Dave's take on Adam Schefter's report.
Well, I guess, look, Adam's a great source and have known him for a long time. I'm just sort of surprised that, and I would be surprised if that's the way it went down. Because, look, they brought him in last year and talked to him, and they know what he's about. And, you know, and they had players last year that knelt, you know, and that's the thing that a lot of people have said. And I think Warren Moon's the one that pointed that out to me. It's like, look, they don't, you know, they allowed that whole thing last year. Michael Bennett did it every game and Jeremy Lane. And so it's not as if that is a deal breaker for them.
But Dave said maybe if Kaepernick's insisting on doing this, maybe it proves that he just doesn't care as much about football as he does his social activism.
I do not get the impression that Colin Kaepernick is in love with football right now. I think that he is using that as a platform to do other things and to get on with his life's work. So, you know, again, they brought him in last year. They weren't impressed with what he had to say. They didn't think that he was all ball. And so, look, I know Austin Davis is not as talented as Colin Kaepernick, but, you know, that's really what you're looking for is somebody who's going to be really committed to your football team and that their number one goal is to, you know, help the team. And I just don't know that Kaepernick is really that kind of a guy.
And I will tell you that Kaepernick's not the only person in that position. The Cincinnati Bengals brought in a Pro Bowler for a workout, and same thing. They said, hey, are you going to be able to stand for the anthem every game? And he wouldn't give an answer, and the Bengals said, okay, well, we don't want to deal with that. So this is the bottom line. If you want to be an NFL player, I mean, the most competitive, you know, fiercely competitive sport, you got to be all in with that being your priority. And if you're using football as your platform for social activism, then you're not all in as a football player. And so if this report by ESPN is correct, I applaud the Seahawks for making sure that Kaepernick would not be a distraction because of social activism. But again, this is just one guy reporting. And Adam Schefter, as Dave said, is a good source, usually has solid sources. I don't know to what extent this story is accurate. Next up in the big lead.
The big lead. I sense a Dory rant coming on.
I've gotten a lot of feedback from you on what we covered at the beginning of the show this afternoon, and that is my disgust with Seattle City Council President Bruce Harrell and the rest of the city council that has decided to make Seattle the first city in the country to force Uber and Lyft to raise their rates. The plan, if it continues as has been discussed, the Seattle City Council would force Uber to double their fares. And why? Well, because the Seattle City Council has been purchased by the Teamsters Union. The taxi cab drivers work for the Teamsters. And because Uber and Lyft have developed a fantastic technological platform that has revolutionized the taxi cab industry and transferred it to this ride sharing, because of that, the city council has decided we're going to just try to force Uber and Lyft to double their fares so we can reward the Teamsters and make the taxi cab drivers on equal footing. Now, you really want to make the taxi cab drivers on equal footing? Let them lower their prices and compete with Uber. But no, that's not what the bought and paid for Seattle City Council was told to do by the union that owns them. And some of the facts of this story, and I find this particularly disturbing with Bruce Harrell, who has kids the same age as my kids. There are a lot of 20-somethings, and I read an email that I got from a 24-year-old University of Washington grad, and she CC'd me what she sent to Bruce Harrell. And just to sum it up, she said, there are a lot of 20-somethings who use Uber responsibly so that they don't drink and drive. And there are some people who have said, hey, look, if you go out drinking in Seattle and it costs $60 to $90 to go out drinking for a night, which it doesn't. It doesn't cost that. You can go out drinking, get out of there for $25 or $30, but still be over the legal limit. But then you have 20-somethings on a tight budget already, college students on a tight budget. And now they have to decide, should I spend, it used to be $8 to take an Uber home, and now it's going to be $16? Maybe I'll just risk it and drive myself. Seattle City Council will be putting more drunk drivers on the road, and the statistics back me up, because DUIs have decreased 10% in Seattle since Uber and Lyft came into the city. So that is directly attributable to the fact that more and more people have decided, since it's affordable, this is a great alternative to drinking and driving. I talked with an Uber driver a couple of hours ago, Lynn Reed. Give me your perspective on this proposal by the city council.
Yeah, we were really disappointed that with all the drivers who came to testify in person and this massive amount of signatures, that the city council just pretty much ignored all input and went with their personal agenda and passed this resolution. Raising the fares to nearly double would have a catastrophic impact on the TNC rideshare business in Seattle.
And what the city council wants to do is destroy a private industry because they're too good. They're too affordable. And the old school union driver taxicab biz, they can't compete. And so they buy the Seattle City Council and say, hey, force our competition out of business. I mean, this is like mob stuff. And Lynn, who I talked to, she also made the point, it's really going to hurt the people that the Seattle City Council always lies about caring about.
We call them first mile, last mile. We provide a lot of rides out of, lower income neighborhoods where people don't have transportation to the mass transit stations. So we provide those rides from their home to the mass transit, you know, station, and then back home again. And if now their you know, rates just doubled, they're going to have a really hard time affording that transportation.
20,000 signatures by Uber, Lyft drivers and customers were presented to the Seattle City Council. And they ignored all of that because they've already made up their mind. They say, yeah, we're still working on the plan. But these mobsters, they don't mind. If people are going to drive drunk, and as I said, and as Lynn proves by her life as a driver, Uber gets drunk drivers off the road. They're probably going to take more risks on the roads themselves.
Yep, I completely agree. So I actually am typically a nighttime driver. So I usually start about 9 p.m. and then drive to about 3 a.m. So I am the heart of that transportation option for people who have been out on the scene and who have been drinking and choose a safe way to get home. I was driving in Seattle last night, and three of my last four riders were drinking quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom line is that DUIs have decreased by 10% since Uber and Lyft came to Seattle. And I really fear that that will reverse itself if these rates are doubled by the city council.
Hey, if some young people die, that's just too bad. You know, Bruce Harrell's okay with that. He's okay with that. He's got a labor union to reward for their campaign donations. And so what? I mean, the entire Seattle City Council seems to be behind this. Mike O'Brien, you have to understand, these people do not care if people are going to die behind the wheel or kill innocent people on the road. That is not their priority as city council members. These are really reprehensible, disgusting people. I've gotten a lot of feedback from you. A lot of people are, Dory, thanks for bringing this from the 425. Thanks for bringing this Uber issue to the forefront of your show. The city council trying to price fix is truly one of the most amazing things that I've heard. I would love to hear you debate one of the socialist city council members about this. I would love to. None of them will come on my show. None of them. And frankly, I don't blame them because I would destroy them in a debate on any of these issues. I have too much information about what they accept in campaign donations. I have information, you know, we broke the story on our show about Mike O'Brien's wife illegally using free labor for her business. I mean, yeah, we've exposed so much about these weasels that they're not going to come on the show with me. I'd love to. And I have an open invitation to all of them. You know, Sally Bagshaw trying to make sure that an accused child rapist stayed in office working behind the scenes to keep a likely child rapist in the mayor's office. Yeah, we've seen all of those documents. These are horrible people on the city council. A lot of people are wondering how this is legal for a city council to force a private company to raise their rates, to charge their customers more. And I'm sure there would be a legal challenge to this, but the fact that they think that they can do this just shows the depths to which the Seattle City Council has sunk. Love to hear your thoughts. You can text us 98973, email us, MyNorthwest.com, Dory Monson show page. That is your big lead this hour.
The big lead on Cairo Radio.
Ursula's going to check the news, and then we're going to check our favorite sound bites of the day. Awesome audio is coming up. Hey, thanks for listening to the Dory Monson Show podcast, brought to you by Industrious Office. If you are on the search for your business's next home, there's simply no hotter place in the country than downtown Seattle right now. I went on a tour with Emily at Industrious Office. It's an amazing workspace right on 6th and Lenora in the heart of all that Seattle has to offer. Visit industriousoffice.com/Cairo or call Emily to schedule a tour. Mention Cairo, receive your first month lease for free.
Hey there, business owners. Isn't this great? You can listen to Dory anytime, anywhere. If you're listening, your customers probably are too. So you need to give me a call. I can help you out and get your business placed right here in this show. 206-726-6819. It's Tina Sorensen, the General Sales Manager for Cairo Radio.
So I want to make sure I understand this. So the dog that ate pot acted like he was drunk?
Yeah.
Is that
or
different
high.
From acting like he was high?
Apparently.
You ever seen a drunk dog?
No.
Have you ever
seen a high dog?
This is one of my many wonderful childhood memories.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Your dog?
Yeah. We had this dog named Lasha. She was a Lhasa.
Lush?
A Lhasa Apso.
Oh.
A very unaffectionate dog. These Lhasa Apsos, they were bred to for the royalty of Tibet. They were bred to like be their protectors, but they're just little dogs. So Lhasa would always sleep right outside my mom's bedroom door, and I guess as a protector, but very unaffectionate. If you were petting her, she'd hang out with you, and the second you stopped, she just would walk away.
Hmm.
And this is the dog I had when I was a kid. So one,
oh no,
so bad. But one of the years when my dad was around, he was drinking, and my mom gets sick of him drinking, and she found his beer stash, and she opens the cans of beers and pours them out in the yard, and kind of puddled up. And next thing I know, I look over, and there's
yum
Lasha
yum
lapping up the beer. This is one of my wonderful bucolic Ballard childhood stories. So I see Lasha lapping up the beer, and then about, I don't know, not long, 5 minutes later, Lasha's just wobbling and walking and falls over.
Oh.
Fell over. She was so drunk.
So what'd you do?
That happens.
It just kind of wore off. Just let her sleep it off. Didn't try any concoctions, like any hangover.
No.
Yeah. Remedies.
We took her to Beth's for eggs and hash browns.
Well, apparently, I mean, you don't have to have that much pot ingested. I mean, depending on the size of the dog, but yeah. I mean, it could kill a dog.
Oh, yeah. Well. Yeah, well, it doesn't take much beer, I discovered, too. Okay, with that as mere prelude, let's get to our favorite sound bites of the day.
This is Dory Monson's Awesome Audio Clips of the Day.
Number three, this is a shorty but a goodie. Alex Trebek on Jeopardy. I don't know if Jeopardy survives. I don't know who's going to be the next host of Jeopardy. There were rumors a couple of years ago that Anderson Cooper wanted the gig.
Anderson Cooper's way too busy, and he loves that Bravo network, too.
Yeah.
So if he's going to jump the ship from CNN, he's going there.
But what better gig than being a game show host? We've talked about that before.
Yes.
Trebek makes, I think, more than $10 million a year. You go in, you tape a month's worth of shows in one day.
He is getting snarly. He's just getting meaner and meaner.
Well, and he's also getting sexier and sexier.
What?
Yeah, like when he was reading a Britney Spears lyric on the show.
Number three.
To quote Britney, so if I said I want your body now, would you hold it against me?
It's college week.
College week? Britney's way too old for college students. Really? They're doing Britney on college
yes.
week? She's ancient. She's like 35 or something.
Hey, she was a pop star when the college age kids were teenagers. Come on.
No.
Or at least, yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Yes.
Maybe marginal ones still.
Yes.
At number two, it's a little boy, and it's his first birthday. And the parents, they have these blue balloons inflated behind the kid, and they have a baby blue birthday cake. And the cake is kind of sitting between the kid's legs. And then this happens.
Number two.
Wow, look at that cake, Leo. Eat it. Oh, he's peeing on it.
For God's sake. Oh, my.
The best laid plans.
For God's sake. Oh, man. And at number one, I'm a day late on this because this was 17 years ago yesterday. But I listened to this clip, and it is a reminder of why Dave Niehaus, who became my dear, dear friend, Dave Niehaus was just the best at baseball play-by-play. The 17th anniversary of one of the greatest play-by-play calls you will ever hear.
Number one.
Ichiro was the Mariner right fielder.
Terrence Long is lead over at first. Here comes a 3-2 pitch on the way. Swung on and a ground ball punched into right field for a base hit. So heading to third base is Long. The throw to third base, and they've got him nailed at third base on a tremendous throw by Ichiro. I'm here to tell you that Ichiro threw something out of Star Wars down there at third base. He fired a shot about 3 feet off the ground all the way on the fly to David Bell, and Terrence Long was D-O-A.
Oh, simply the best right there. Today's sign is coming up next. And down the stretch we come. What a day, what a show, what a show, what a day. And we shall finish strong with today's edition of
Today's Sign that the End is Near.
Today's sign the world is soon coming to an end. And this first story is a very serious story, and it does just illustrate the depths of humanity. It's the story of a 29-year-old father named Sean Cole. He has an 11-year-old son who is autistic. And the dad decided, the son doesn't live with dad, but the son went to visit dad one weekend, Thanksgiving weekend, a couple of years ago. And the dad says he saw his son in a compromising position with another boy. And so the dad feared that his autistic son was gay. And so dad got daddy's 20-year-old girlfriend, a woman named Khadija Moore, he got his girlfriend to rape his 11-year-old autistic son. Again, because he feared the son was gay. According to the trial testimony, the 20-year-old woman raped, sodomized, and inappropriately touched the child and forced the child to perform sex acts on her. And the prosecutor and the court papers say it was solely that the father was worried that his son was gay or might become gay. How much lower can you possibly get in humanity? The prosecutor said, I've been prosecuting child sex crimes for a long time now, and this is the first time I've run into anything like this. The most terrible part of this is the little boy still doesn't understand that it's not his fault. So the boy is 13 now, and the prosecutor says he is doing well, but he's going to have to go on without ever seeing daddy again because the father and the girlfriend, they're waiting for sentencing, but they're both facing life in prison. 29 and 20 years old, the dad and the girlfriend. Life in prison because that is the punishment of rape and sexual abuse of a child younger than 12 years old. As parents, our absolute paramount duty in life is to protect our children. And the depth to which this father sank. Yeah, life in prison? Absolutely. Okay, next up in today's sign, on a much lighter note, I guess, up at a bar in the Yukon Territory in Canada, it's called the Sourdough Saloon. And at the Sourdough Saloon, the big hit drink is the Sour Toe Cocktail. It is a tumbler filled with whiskey and a frozen mummified toe, human toe. So why do they drink liquor with mummified toes in them? Well, they say it's good for business. They say the prevalence of frostbite up near the Arctic Circle means there's a ready supply of toes to dunk in the whiskey. And all of this started back in the 1920s. Two brothers, Otto and Louis Lycan, they did some rum smuggling on the side. And on one run, while being pursued by Mounties, one of the brothers got frostbite in a toe. To stop it from becoming gangrenous, the other brother either hacked or shot it off, depending on which version of the story you want to believe. And they kept the trophy in their shack. It was discovered 50 years later in 1973. The guy who discovered it said, hey, let's start a drinking ritual with this toe. And they said, okay, we'll put it in the bottom of a whiskey glass. And 100,000 people over the years have had the sour toe cocktail, but they're not still using the original toe. And that's because in 1980, a local miner was trying to beat the sour toe record. And on his 13th cocktail, his chair tipped backwards and he swallowed the toe whole. And they say since then, they have had seven toes since that they put in the bottom of the sour toe cocktail. So if you want a unique drink, get on up there to Yukon territory. And then finally, in today's sign, when you go into the bathroom, I hate those hand dryers. They never get the hand totally dry. I'm never patient enough. And I like having paper towels because I can then use the paper towel to open the door and not get the door handle filth on my freshly cleaned hands. Now I have another reason to hate those hand dryers. A new study has found a dirty secret about hand dryers in public restrooms. Researchers say the machines are designed to blow hot air on you, but they are actually sucking up feces particles and spraying them on your hands. The report was published in Applied and Environmental Microbiology. I've been a subscriber since 1986. It found that the air blasted out from the hand-drying nozzles contains far more bacteria than normal bathroom air. And study after study shows that they do indeed suck in fecal bacteria before drying your hands. So, yes, I would say that is another reason to hate those things. Oh, yeah. So if you're out on a date and your date goes into the bathroom that has those hand dryers just as you're leaving the restaurant, and then you walk out and your date puts out their hand to hold your hand, now you know what they're going to be transferring to you. We should just outlaw the hand dryers. Just go to paper towels. Make it mandatory. That's what I say. And that is today's sign. The end is near. And I got to get out of here. I've said everything that I have to say for today. But I'm going to go home and think up a bunch of new stuff for tomorrow's Friday extravaganza. The Ron and Don Show is coming up next, and I will see you back here tomorrow. High noon.
I feel my job is to make sure this program is morally upright and cultural and wholesome.
You got your work cut out for you, Bird.
Now that was unwholesome. That was not cultural.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.